Around the world, people are working to bring a greater sense of balance to the planet. Earth Wisdom Circles is here to showcase these people and projects. Now, here's your host for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio, Elaine Grohman.
Today, my guest is Dr. Gurjit Singh, who is a cardiac electrophysiologist at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit, Michigan. For those of you who are listening outside of the country or outside of the state. And his clinical practice is, his specialty is working with various rhythm disorders of the heart. And he completed his residency in internal medicine at Henry Ford Hospital, but he graduated from medical school in India. So welcome to the show, Dr. Singh. And
thank
it's
you
wonderful
so-
to have you. It feels funny. I'm usually used to calling you by your first name, so I might do that.
Thank you so,
so
much,
thank
Elaine.
I appreciate your friendship, and I appreciate your kindness. And when I saw the article that was online, I believe it was on Facebook when I first saw it, about the research that you kind of stumbled upon, interestingly, and your curiosity made it a natural desire to find out what was going on. So can you tell us a little bit about the research? First of all, tell us what an electrophysiologist is.
Yes.
So that people understand your specialty as a physician.
Absolutely. Well, thanks again and giving me the opportunity to, you know, come on this podium and speak about, you know, what I do and then what we discovered. So an electrophysiologist, as the name implies, it's somebody who deals with the electrical issues of the heart. So I am the heart rhythm specialist. So patients can have slow heart rhythms, fast heart rhythms. So we deal with those. Patients require pacemakers, defibrillators, and then a procedure called an ablation procedure. So besides doing pacemakers and defibrillators, I treat patients and cure their rhythm problems, especially such as fast rhythms, such as atrial fibrillation or ventricular tachycardias. We go inside the heart percutaneously, so without opening the chest. So it's all done through a tiny tube called a catheter. And we go inside the heart, go in the different chambers and find the problem or the circuits and burn those circuits with a catheter called an ablation catheter. Mm-hmm. So that's what my field entails in curing various rhythm problems.
Mm. Okay. And as we know, the heart is probably the most important organ. Well, they're all important.
They're all important. But, yeah. It's the engine of the body.
It's the engine of the body, yeah. Along with the brain.
Yeah.
So tell us about the research that you discovered, or the problem that you discovered, I should say, and then the research that ensued from that.
Right. So my fellow, who's a trainee, who's becoming an electrophysiologist, just like me, Dr. Josh Greenberg, he purchased an iPhone 12 Pro Max late in December. And then he was discussing that he read that there are some magnets inside the phone, on the back of the phone. And we were like, okay, maybe we should evaluate these devices, these phones, with our clinical devices. So what happens is, Lem, I'm going to show you what a pacemaker and a defibrillator looks like. I'll explain what's inside these devices, you know, what does a magnet does, and then I'll come up over with the phone. So here I'm showing you a device called a pacemaker. So this is a tiny device which goes on the left side of the chest of a patient for who have slow heart rhythms. So this device will look for your own heartbeats. If you don't have your own heartbeats, then this will deliver the electrical stimulus to keep your heart running. So this is what a pacemaker looks like. A defibrillator, on the other hand, is a bigger device. Again, goes on the left side usually most of the time. Does the same job as a pacemaker, but it does something more than a pacemaker. So for patients who have various heart conditions, such as who had a prior history of heart attacks, or who are born with abnormal genes, or have thick muscle called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, some of those patients, unfortunately, can die suddenly from a rhythm called ventricular tachycardias or ventricular fibrillation. So what happens is, suddenly, out of the blues, the bottom chamber of the heart goes in a very fast, deadly rhythm, which is usually fatal if it's not terminated externally or by a defibrillator. So these devices, the defibrillator actually looks for those abnormal rhythms, and should that happen, it delivers an electric shock to the heart and brings the patient back to normal life. So these are really what we call a life-saving therapies for those patients at risk. So that's the difference between a pacemaker and a defibrillator. Okay.
Okay.
Now, these devices have an inbuilt mechanism. There is a switch called a magnetic switch inside, which allows us to take control of these devices in case of an emergency or to do some diagnostic testing. So what we do is we actually have what we call a handheld magnet. So these are really like a donut-shaped magnets, permanent magnets. So when you bring a magnet close to a defibrillator, what the magnet will do, it will turn off the switch and will tell the defibrillator to stop looking at the heart rhythm and do not shock a patient. So we use that technology, especially patients when going into the operating room who are going getting surgeries done to prevent that inappropriate shock, so to speak. In a pacemaker, if you put a magnet on a pacemaker, the pacemaker, what it does is starts pacing your heart regardless of what your heart rhythm is. So what we call as asynchronous pacing. So this is the two differences between a pacemaker and a defibrillator. And these effects on these devices are temporary. So the moment you take the magnet away, the device goes back to the normal state and they function normally. So it's not, I just want to clarify that bringing a magnet close to a device, pacemaker or a defibrillator, is not that they're going to make the devices function abnormally. Those are just designed responses to the magnets. So what we did was that we took an iPhone 12. So I have something in my hand here. So what we found was that there are magnets inside this phone. Apple came up with this new iPhone 12 series. So these magnets are helps in aligning what we call the QI charging capability. So we all see those wireless charger where we put our phones these days. So what Apple did was they said, why don't we put magnets inside these phones? So when you put on a charger, the phone gets stuck to the charger and you can push in the power fast. So it's another technology of rapid charging. So what we did was we after getting formal IRB approval, we tested this iPhone interaction on a patient who had a defibrillator. He had a Medtronic defibrillator, which is one of the companies which make the defibrillator. And what we did was we brought the phone close to the patient's device and we looked for that interaction that does this phone turns off or turns on the magnetic switch inside the defibrillator, and will it turn it off? So to our surprise, that's what the phone did. It actually just behaved like as an external magnet. So it turned off the defibrillator for the time the phone was on. And the moment we took the phone away, the device went back to normal function. So we went on to publish this observation in Heart Rhythm Journal, which is a peer review journal for all the EP community, electrophysiology community. And as you know, got a worldwide attention, you know, local channels and throughout the world. And what we raised a public issue was there is a possibility that a patient who has a defibrillator, maybe he's keeping his phone in his pocket, or maybe he's laying back. And what if he goes in a deadly rhythm and this phone has turned the device off? So that defibrillator will not deliver the life-saving therapy. So that's the reason we raise this public issue. Now, again, the chance of that happening is very low, but I believe there is probably one, if I can say one patient from this interaction, you know, I'll feel myself that I did something to the community.
Yes, yes.
Again, just to clarify, just holding a phone in your hand is not going to turn off your defibrillator or turn a pacemaker off, or holding a phone in your pocket. There are usual recommendations in existence already from various societies and from the heart rhythm community is to keep any electronic devices for patients who have a pacemaker or a defibrillator, keep them 6 inches away regardless. We also tell our patients to use the phone on the right ear if the device is on the left side. And bottom line is not to keep any phones in their pockets. So that was the background. And from
so
there,
Gurjit, is this just iPhones that do this, or is there other devices as well?
So I am conducting a study which has been approved recently, where we're going to test patients with different devices from different companies. And I'm testing iPhones and Android-based phones. Now, to my knowledge, what I've researched online, I don't believe the Android phone or the Samsung phones, they do not have an inbuilt magnet like an iPhone. The Apple Watch has a very strong magnet, so we are testing that interaction also. But the problem in the phone world is, even if your phone doesn't have a magnet, but there are cases for the phones, which have inbuilt magnet inside, or the whole case is a magnet. to do the same job.
Wow. So,
regardless,
it's amplifying it.
It's amplifying it, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think it's going to do the same thing to these devices. So as of now, FDA, various other authorities are working on this problem and trying to figure out how big the problem is and try to come up with a solution. But I believe at the end, the issue will be, or the recommendation will be the same, that please keep your phones, regardless what kind or what company or what phone case you have, to keep them 6 inches away.
So how have you worked directly with Apple, and how have they been willing to speak with you and work with you? Obviously, this is a
yes.
any life that's lost or any life that's
exactly
threatened is a big challenge.
So as you see, the Apple actually had a warning when they launched the iPhone 12 that the phone contains magnet, but it was a very generic warning. And since our publication, they have changed their warning label, and the warning now says it has more magnets and it has the capability of interaction with the devices. So please consult your physicians or your device manufacturer. But Apple did reach out to me, and we had a very cordial discussion. And now Apple is contributing their part with the FDA and other societies who are working on this problem.
Mm. Okay, well, that's really good to know. And I'm grateful that you took that initiative to see, you know, what can be done, because we just don't know what all of these things that we are so wedded to, in a way, you know, we think this iPhone or a phone is our heartbeat itself. You know, people are afraid to have it be away from us.
Correct.
You know?
And now the problem is more because the newer defibrillators, most companies are moving. So there's something called remote monitoring. So these devices have they come up with a tiny box as a monitor, which we give it to the patient. They go home and plug it at the bedside. And every night when they sleep, the recording device, it records, pulls the data out of your device remotely. And then that gets sent to us to look for any alerts, such as, you know, the device shock you, or the pacemaker leads are functioning normal, battery life, and so on and so forth. So now more companies are moving towards what we call a remote platform on an iPhone or a phone-based platform.
Yes.
So actually the phone, especially like Medtronic has the phone app now, where the phone actually acts as your receiver for your data. So now it's even more important, because you are telling the patient to keep your phone close to you, because that's how you're going to, you know, transmit your data.
Right.
So we believe that's the reason we came out with this public kind of alert with these iPhones.
You know, this is kind of, maybe sounds like it's off the subject, but you know that I'm an energy healer, mm-hmm. and I'm always looking at how are things interacting with us. And it just came to my mind, you know, our blood is mostly iron.
Correct.
So iron can be magnetized.
Right. So
is there this is very hypothetical, but it just came to my mind. So is there any challenges with it affecting the blood in some crazy way?
Again, you know, we don't have the exact data, but, you know, electromagnetic radiation is all around us. Like the phones now, we talk about 5G. You know, 5G is on the higher end of the electromagnetic spectrum. The older phones were working in the radio wave spectrum. Now
right.
The 5G is technically in the microwave part of the electromagnetic spectrum, so higher energy, higher frequency. So those electromagnetic interactions are always there. But I believe since we do clinical MRIs all the time, you know, which is in a very big magnetic field, we're talking about, you know, one
right.
Tesla, three Tesla, which is like 100,000 times higher than the Earth's magnetic field, and those patients do fine. So I don't think it interacts directly, because the magnetic field from these devices is not that strong. So actually,
right.
I tested the magnetic field with a device called a magnetic flux meter or a magnetometer to check how much magnets power this has, and it turned out to be these magnets are strong enough to turn off those devices, turn the switch off. So the switches inside these pacemakers and defibrillators, any magnetic field above 10 Gauss, so Gauss is a unit of magnetism we measure, anything above 10 Gauss when brought in close to these devices can activate that magnetic switch and can change these devices' behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And through, I know other authorities are also testing how much magnetism is there in these magnets, but what I have found is upward of 400 or 500 Gauss, which is like almost 40 times the actual limit, which is designed to turn off these devices. So these are decent magnets, but I don't believe the magnetic effect is that strong to affect your the ions or the hemoglobin. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, we have so many things that, as you said, you know, they're done remotely. You know, we know that there's people that can just put their phone to something to test their blood sugar level and all of these things. We've become so technologically, we've become the technology.
Right, yeah.
You know, so is there any problem with one thing? Let's say, as an example, if someone had something that might read their blood sugar level, so that's reading one kind of with one device, and then maybe they have a pacemaker or they have a defibrillator. Mm-hmm. Is that even a possibility that that could have any interaction, or more than one device or more than one thing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So as I said, you know, most of these interactions happen when you bring these electromagnetic fields very close to the device. So we have patients who have what we call like the nerve stimulator, the TENS unit, or spinal cord stimulator, bladder pacemakers, or gastric pacemakers. So usually we test those patients with these interactions, and it's usually the pacemaker or the defibrillator do not interact with those devices. So I don't expect that using a, you know, insulin or a glucose monitoring of some nature with an external device will interact with the pacemaker defibrillator. But again, the key message here is, regardless of whatever electronic device you have, please do not bring it, keep it 6 inches away from your implanted site.
Right. So tell us a little bit, how often, you know, as is, obviously this is quite a specialty that you have. Mm-hmm. What is, you know, I want to just educate the public so there's people listening around the world. You know, what is, how many people have to have these kind of devices? You know, obviously in the past, and please correct me if I'm wrong, you know, they had just exclusively the external defibrillators.
Mm-hmm.
And when did then internal defibrillators become more of a common thing?
Yeah, so as you know, the cardiovascular disease still carries number one morbidity and mortality, at least in the U.S. population, because of the coronary artery disease, because of the heart attacks, heart failure. So a lot of patients are getting these devices. So on an average, 100,000 defibrillators are implanted in the U.S. alone. And then more than 300,000 pacemakers are implanted in the U.S. Worldwide, the numbers for these devices is upward of 700,000 devices are implanted across the world.
Now, is this annually or?
Annually. Yeah, these are from the data from various surveys they have done. I believe the survey was almost 10, 15 years ago, but this number keeps growing. So there's a substantial amount of patients who receive these devices yearly. Mm. And the defibrillators have been there for the last 25 to 30 some years, and they become internal. The first pacemakers were done in 1960s and 70s, we're talking about. So there's 40, 50 years worth of these devices already existing in the planet. But the numbers are substantial. And 100,000 patients with defibrillators is a big number annually. We're adding on patients.
Yes, yeah. So you're extending, obviously, the longevity of someone's life.
That's correct.
And the quality of their life. So, you know, how have you seen that? First of all, I applaud you for, you know, doing this research. And you never know how different organizations, different corporations like the medical world and those devices that are being created, how there can be a synergy of working collaboratively.
Correct.
Which I think is so important, because some organizations might want you to not speak about that problem. But obviously, we need to speak about that problem.
Right.
So, how are you finding, you know, an openness between manufacturing? Because obviously, all of these companies are manufacturing facilities.
Correct. Yeah. No. I believe I've been in talking to all the engineers from the device companies who manufacture these devices. So we are actually meeting on a monthly basis through a organization called AAMI, which is the Association for Advancement of Medical Instrumentation. So AAMI is a US-based organization who actually have these working groups who look into various interactions, or who kind of sets the standards for a device, a medical device, to pass on to the public. So they do all those testing criterias, for example, electromagnetic interference with pacemakers. So there's a working group for that, actually, in this AIMI organization. So they work with the International Standard Organization and work with the FDA to approve these devices before they, you know, become a public use. So the AIMI is actually organizing a monthly meetings with FDA, with the device manufacturers, and with Apple, and with myself, where we're discussing, you know, how to handle the situation, come up with the plans, and they're also looking at the data from different companies, or FDA is doing their own independent bench testing on these phones, and so am I. So we are in the process of coming up with some recommendation, hopefully in near future, based on some more studies and data to tell what to tell the public.
Well, that's great. And you know, what is the longevity of these individual products? Like, if someone had to get a pacemaker, is that something that they have for life, or is that something that has to be intermittently exchanged?
That's a good question. So a pacemaker, typically, again, it depends on how much you use, but an average lifespan, at least in today's world, of a pacemaker is anywhere from 7 to 10 years. So after that time frame, you have to replace these devices, where the patient come in the hospital, we open up the skin incision, we take the old unit out and put a brand new one in, and the cycle starts again. A defibrillator usually lasts a little bit less than a pacemaker, so 7 to 10 years is the average lifespan, at least in today's world, depending on which company and what kind of defibrillator you are. But yes, every 10 to 12 years, a patient has to go through a replacement. So you can imagine if we do these devices in a younger patient, such as in 20s and 30s, and they live up to 100 years, they have almost 7 or 8 replacements in their lifetime. So 7 or 8 different scars.
So it's interesting. I was just going to ask you, what is the youngest patients that you have? Do you ever have like infants, little ones, or is it mostly a little bit older than that that might need this kind of thing?
Well, my specialty is obviously adult electrophysiology. So we deal with patients above 17, 18 years of age, but there are pediatric electrophysiologists in the country who deal with those issues in infants and younger kids as well, which have their own set of problems. So yes, kids and infants do also get defibrillators depending on the life-threatening issues they have. But my youngest patient I can think of is 18 years old who, you know, are born with some genetic disorders, which puts them at a higher risk for dying suddenly, and they require a defibrillator.
Right, right. Yeah. So I'm just thinking about, you know, how many little kids might be listening to their iPhone as they're falling asleep. You know, I think that there has to be, I'm sure you're probably working already with the pediatric pediatricians.
Yeah, I am not directly, but you raise a good point, and especially kids who like to keep their phones. I mean, now in today's world, everybody's attached to a phone. And there has been data and publications in the past, like with the big headphones, because the anytime you have a speaker or any headphone has a magnet also. Like you can leave your headphone on your chest, and which can sit on your device. So we tell the patients that, you know, please don't put a big headset or headphones on closed on your neck and keep it away, because it also has a magnet inside.
Well, that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
You know, so how are your colleagues? I'm sure your colleagues are, you know, grateful that you're willing to take this extra step to do this research.
Everybody was very appreciative and supportive, and especially Henry Ford Health System. You know, they came up with their own press release and in a very nice fashion. So everybody was very supportive throughout the research community and through Henry Ford.
Oh, that's really good. So tell us about some of the other things about your life. Why did you want to be a physician? You're originally from India.
India, yes. And the reason to become a physician is being driven by my parents. You know, they just made sure that I study hard and then got good scores. And they're like, okay, why don't you go into medicine? So that was pretty simple. It's your parents decide your career back in the day.
Well, was anyone in medicine in your family?
Or? No, I'm the only physician in my whole family from my father's and mother's side. Yeah.
So what, did you always know that you wanted to be in cardiology, or was there other things that, I'm always intrigued by, you know, individuals that go into medicine, because, you know, it's a difficult field to be in.
It is.
But it's also your heart, you know, being that you're in cardiology, but your heart is there to help individuals. So the compassion that is a part of who you are as an individual is you know, very important.
Right. So I always had inclination towards something to do with the hand, so some procedural based specialty. So I wanted to be a surgeon in the beginning, but then I changed my mind and did training in internal medicine, and then cardiology came to some extent naturally. I enjoyed reading the ECGs, the electrocardiograms, and looking at the arrhythmia mechanism. That's what made me go towards cardiology and then eventually electrophysiology. I always been interested with doing a lot of repairs in electronics and computers. So circuits just came naturally to me. So electrophysiology became my, just the passion. And this is where my heart is. So as everybody says, you should do where your heart is. And no matter what, what you do is always going to be good. The results will always will be good.
That's right.
If you follow that.
So again, my guest is Dr. Gurjit Singh, and he is working at Henry Ford Hospital, which is in downtown Detroit in Michigan, for those of you who are listening outside of the country. And Henry Ford is a big major hospital right in the city of Detroit, but there's many satellites in and around the metropolitan Detroit area. So Dr. Singh, can you tell me what have you seen as, with this COVID crisis that we have had? Have you seen any correlation between long-term stress that people are having in relation to how their cardiac function is? Is it, we know that our emotions, our thinking affects us physiologically. Have you seen any uptake or any challenges that maybe we're learning about what stress does to the body, what it does to the cardiac function? Just as an aside, just as a,
Right. I assume, I'm sure people are looking into various factors. I mean, there is the COVID pandemic has taken a toll on the kids and every all of us, especially at the emotional level. And we all know there is a big correlation between cardiac diseases or coronary artery disease and with your stress levels. We all know, like during the 9/11 attack, the incidence of myocardial infarction, the heart attacks increased because of all the stress. So I'm sure people are looking into this area of mind and cardiac and condition with the COVID. But fair enough to say, I believe there must be some correlation with the fact, especially when patients already have cardiac diseases and who end up dealing with COVID or their family members with COVID. I am not myself directly aware of any studies, but I'm sure I did not look into that directly, but I'm sure people are looking into this field.
Well, I think it would be an interesting thing to see what might be the correlation. With
Correct.
This ongoing stress, and certainly many healthcare institutions, I believe that Henry Ford has an integrative medicine department. How can we help to use meditation, use energy healing, massage, different things that help us to just not have our mind be racing and therefore our heart be racing and our thinking be racing and stress the body out unnecessarily?
Correct, Elaine. Yeah, that's a very important point, and not many people talk about that. So, like in my clinics, when I see patients with arrhythmias, many arrhythmias or many conditions are stress related. And
yes.
You talk to any patients, and everybody says, I have a stressful job or I have a stressful life. So practically nobody around you is just sitting there and saying, I'm at peace. It all depends on how we define those parameters.
Yes.
But I do make an effort to tell my patients, besides the medical part, that we call it meditation, but something needs to be done on a mind level, on an emotional level, that patient needs to look inside themselves and try to find what the problem is before they start jumping into different medications. I see a lot of patients, and when we look at our medical reconciliation, a lot of patients on so many antidepressants, antipsychotic medications. And I always wondered why, especially in the U.S., the use of antidepressant is just astronomical.
Yes.
And I believe if there's a way, we call it meditation, I'm sure there's a way where we can work on this. We don't call it pandemic or epidemic, but I believe it is in depression. Emotional issue is an epidemic throughout the world, I believe, especially
yes.
in today's world. So I think mind techniques or meditation techniques should be discussed more with the patient or with anybody. And I'm sure we need to find the answers within ourselves.
Well, as you said, since, you know, so many things, we know that stress is a precursor to not just cardiac disease, but so many other diseases. And we assume we're going to have stress. So right. We almost preemptively make something stressful, even though it might not be. And what we have an opportunity to recognize is, what is this experience teaching us about life? Is this something workable? Is this something not workable? And then to make a decision based on that, rather than to just feel that we have to do something because someone says so.
Correct.
That, you know, there's so many things that we have neglected to look at, which could be very important to mitigate so many unnecessary challenges. We assume everything is going to be stressful, but it could be learning, you know.
Right.
Learning doesn't have to be a stressful thing. But we're learning every day. We learn how to drive. We learn how to be parents. We learn how to be in relationships. We learn what food is good for us, what food isn't good for us, how to decide things.
Right.
But we haven't been taught how to honor those things.
Correct. So, and I'm hoping that, and especially with this COVID pandemic, when so many people stayed at home, they had so much time at hand. I hope people had time to reflect back and think about, you know, what we were doing the year before and what we were not doing now. You know, a lot of things we were doing just for no reason, which was creating unnecessary stress. So hopefully people should have looked inside and found some answers during this COVID pandemic.
Well, I'd love to continue conversations with you about this because, you know, obviously the heart is such a big symbol in terms of the symbol of love, but it also is an intricate part of the distribution of oxygen, nutrients,
right.
The mitigation of toxins and gases. It has such a beautiful synergy of life, the exterior life, the interior life, you know, and I think that sometimes, Dr. Singh, then you probably see this all the time, as you mentioned, people have stress, but, you know, maybe people were stressed because of their job, and then they're stressed because they don't have a job, so they don't understand, you know, how do you make choices that are different?
Right.
So how do you see medicine changing as a result of all of this? You know, I'm sure it's brought everything into focus in medical facilities, obviously, and thank goodness and bless you all for I have worked so hard in trying to stem this tide of this pandemic. And I'm sure your colleagues are very stressed, and I have many family members who are in medicine and so grateful to them for the work that they do. And how are you seeing medicine evolve as a function of all of this?
I believe, I mean, especially the technology is advancing. When we talk about technology here, so I mean, we have to work with the technology, with the newer ways of looking at things. Now, you know, we are connecting with patients sitting in our offices now. So this has prior to this video visits or the Zoom meetings have allowed more connections with the patients by keeping mm-hmm. them safe. So all those things should translate into positive outcomes down the road, especially now you increase the outreach, number one.
Yes.
Number two, be able to spread this technology. And number three will be, as we discussed, you know, we talked about the mind and the body connection. So I think that part aspect of the medicine needs to become more important, both on the clinical side, because we don't talk much about that, especially people think, you know, I'm a specialist, you know, it's not my field, you know, why should I talk about mine, or why should I handle somebody's stress, you know, go to your primary care physicians or to your family medicine. But I think we should, all opportunities should be used to address this mind-body connection, which goes to back to the training, actually, that it should be, in my opinion, some classes or some kind of courses during the medical school training, probably, which should allow physicians to get trained in this aspect as well.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we have to remember, and I'm very grateful, and I know I've had conversations with you in the past that I've had the opportunity to work with people in the medical world, and both at two local medical schools for about 15 years each as a part of integrative medicine. And what we forget is we're only alive because we have a body.
Right.
So we cannot think that somehow our body, our emotions, and our mind are separate from one another. They cannot be. We know that you ask somebody to imagine that they're biting on a lemon and they salivate, you know?
Right.
So is that just, how does that happen? How does the body have this thought and then an immediate response even
right.
before the thought is completed? So it's a fallacy that there is a possibility that these things can be separate. It is one working unit.
It is. I mean, all those, like, the four aspects of the human system is, you know, the physical body is only the one structure, but then even just the whole thought itself or the mind itself is a body. And
that's
then
right.
You have the emotional body and then the energy level body. So, I mean, all these are working all together. And the point is, you know, how you keep all these four aspects in balance. And that's what you can move forward. And that's how
yes.
you can manage your stress and fear and everything by keeping mm-hmm. these four bodies in a good balanced way.
Yes. And certainly, you know, as a physician, you've probably witnessed countless awe-inspiring things. Because the body itself is intelligent. You know, I often speak to people, as you know, how we, thank goodness we don't have to say to our body, beat your heart, beat
Correct.
Your heart, you know,
right.
make a peptide, blink your eye, make
right.
a tear. This body has this innate knowing that from the moment of our conception,
right.
something was creating. This mystery was creating all of these very particular parts that create a human body. So there's an intelligence that we have to look at. Some
Correct.
Call it God, some call it creation, but there's an intelligence in life itself.
That's very well said. I mean, every cell is intelligent. Every cell has that whole, the DNA, the whole packages are there, you know, but how every cell is talking to the every other cell, we know they talk, but we don't know why. And that why is the intelligence you're talking about, the source of creation or this energy, which connects everything together. But
yes. And this harmonic rhythm that we have to have, it's not, there isn't just the heart. There isn't just the liver. There isn't just the tissue. It's all one harmonious, beautiful orchestration.
Right.
And, and as you say, you know, why do they talk? Because they need communication. If we have a cell that is not communicating, then it's a dead cell.
Yeah, dead cell or a cell which has goes unchecked, and that becomes probably a tumor. You know,
yes.
some cells starts growing on their own. I mean, we have cell death every day. Like our whole gut gets replaced a couple of days. The whole lining of the gut, what we call endothelium, gets replaced a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
But how some cells stays where they are and how some cells become, you know, start outgrowing themselves and becoming increasing numbers, what we call tumors. So I'm sure there is some imbalance of this intelligence, so to speak.
Yes, misdirected
possibly.
Intelligence of some
which,
way.
Which causes these
yes,
disorders.
Yes,
but.
So what else can you tell us about, you know, what have you learned about the nuances of the heart? That, you know, I'm not sure if you're familiar. Have you ever heard of an organization called HeartMath?
No, I know you mentioned in the past, but I never got a chance to look into it.
Well, it's interesting because it might be something that you want to investigate only because what it does is helps the mind by your thinking to be able mm-hmm. to start to regulate your heartbeat and to get you into a better rhythm, at least to mitigate any high blood pressure or, you know, erratic heartbeat. Because, you know, there's so many things that we do that we forget we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important.
No.
So again, I want to thank my guest today, who is Dr. Gurjit Singh from Henry Ford Hospital System. And as a cardiac electrophysiologist, you have been instrumental in looking at how external devices can affect internally implanted devices. But I want to personally thank you for being the kind of physician you are, kind of human being you are, the gentleness, the kindness that with which you are willing to help others. And I'm hoping that we can get you to CARES. I know you are going to come to CARES of Farmington Hills to help to speak about how our health and our diet affects our physiology, so that we can begin to see ourselves as whole beings, and what we do, what we input into our body affects us. So I want to thank you for being the physician you are.
Thank you so much, Elaine, for your kind words, and it's always been a pleasure
to see you. It's wonderful to see you. Yeah. Thank you for the work you do. And my guest has been Dr. Gurjit Singh. And again, I'm Elaine Grillman for Earth Wisdom Circles on Empower Radio. Please know that your life is the greatest gift you will ever have. Learn how to understand what life is telling you so that you can work with your life and not against it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.